Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that each week discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And if you have any comments you would like to talk about or call in, you can call in at area code 646-716-4893. If you prefer, you can email me questions at bonk@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special guest tonight, I just want to make a few announcements. First of all, I can't believe it's already the end of June, and July is starting this week, coming up, and actually it's starting like tomorrow. So our healing weekend is only weeks away when you think about it. I know it's 12 weeks, but that 12 weeks is going to go really fast. So if you're interested in joining me in a very dynamic healing weekend, please get in touch with me at bonk@aol.com. And our healing weekend this year is going to be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Once a year we have it for my birthday weekend. So we do a lot of sharing, caring, crying, and celebrating. We'll have women from not only this country, we also have, you know, people coming in from Canada. Today I found out one of our sisters in pain in Australia will be joining us, and possibly England. So I'm really excited that we're going to have an international flavor, more so than usual this time. And for women who are looking for that connection and looking to heal, finding support is the best way to do it. Anytime you're going through this situation, it's always a feeling of isolation and that you're all by yourself. By meeting others and sharing stories and seeing that, you know, you're not alone by any stretch of the imagination, it's very healing and it's the beginning of a journey of getting better. So that will be for the weekend of September 28th and 29th. And we're filling up fast. So if you're interested, please once again get in touch with me at bonk@aol.com. Also, I just want to remind people that we have UK support chat on Monday nights, adult children of gay fathers on Wednesday nights, and our own Straight Wives Club chat group on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sunday nights. So you never have to be far away from being in touch with someone. There's always help available, including this radio show. And tonight, as I like to say, we have our own in-house doctor, Dr. Brian Hooper. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you, Bonnie. Delighted to be with you and the ladies tonight.
Yes, and Brian is our comfort person once a month. You know how people have comfort food, Brian? You're my comfort show.
I have my cup of comfort tea with me right now.
That never, unfortunately, wouldn't do for me. If you had a cup of comfort hot chocolate, that might work. But
well.
I don't need it now because I'm on the phone with you. So that's even better. And you know, it's a great substitution for when you need a spiritual lift. And Brian, we said, well, tonight we want to talk. We have several issues to talk about. And the first one I wanted you to discuss a little bit is about the vote that came forth from the Supreme Court. Because that was very controversial, it still is. And can you talk to people a little bit about that? Because a lot of women don't understand, you know, what it really means.
Well, it means it's we're one step further to having equality of committed relationships across the United States, regardless of what a person's sexuality is. In this instance, the court has ruled that where marriages are legal, between people of the same sex and what state they're legal, they must be treated in the same way as other heterosexual marriages in terms of all federal benefits. This is going to be a boon for folks who are in those states in terms of filing joint tax returns, that kind of thing, for military personnel who are the moment in those states, I would imagine, although there is some concern about how it will actually be implemented. Not all the details are decided upon yet, so we have to wait to see how that unfolds.
And I think that one of the issues, correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, there's a lot of issues there, is that in some states you have same-sex marriages that are legal, mm-hmm. but in other states you
right.
don't. And if
That's
somebody
correct.
Moves from a state where it is legal to a state where it's not legal, do those
it's
benefits carry
not,
through?
That's one of the questions, yes. Will the federal benefits carry through if they're residing in a state where it's not, where same-sex marriages are not recognized? And that's yet to be determined.
Brian, let me ask
think,
your opinion on this, because, I mean, I have very strong feelings, and they may be very different than yours. I don't understand why there's not just a national, you know, marriage law, including, you know, divorce
yeah.
laws. I mean, why is it state by state, and every state has certain, you know, rules and regulations? Don't you think this is should be a national issue?
You know, it's a question, it's really it goes back to the question of states' rights, and I think what we're up against today is states' rights versus what are considered social justice rights constitutionally. So, you know, with regard to segregation, no matter what a state determined, federal courts decided that it was unconstitutional to discriminate. So that overrode the power of the states to try to enforce a segregation. With regard to gay marriage, the courts at this point are not going that far. They're simply saying that at the federal level, the same recognition has to be given to legally constituted same-sex marriages as legally constituted heterosexual marriage.
Well, no, but I mean,
so,
I understand
no,
that, but I just don't think it makes any sense. Do you?
Well, I thought you were just
no, I mean, I could be
to
wrong.
Sort of talk about it historically, but in terms of what I think I would like to see, yeah, I'd like to see, you know, equal across the board, and for gay and for straight people, and also the same laws would apply with regard to divorce and spousal support and all of that across all of the states. This piecemeal business to me is kind of silly, but then
you know, I think so too.
I don't have the same kind of strong feelings about states' rights as some people do.
Yes, I don't have strong rights about issues when it comes to marriage, divorce, you know, gay marriage. I mean, I don't understand why this has to be a state-by-state decision. I think this is really something that should be just a national law.
Here's something I can speak on from a place of conviction, and I think, and I'm informed about this, and will give people reason to advocate for gay marriage, no matter what state they live in. And here's what I'd like to say. There are countless benefits that come to straight people when they marry, legal benefits. Without legal marriage in a state, so if the state doesn't have legal marriage, we don't have it in the state for gay folks. In order to begin to ensure the same kind of right, we have to go to a lawyer and cobble together a whole briefcase full of documents to try to make up for that. For instance, if I was in a relationship with somebody and he got sick and was in the hospital, mm-hmm. if I was married to that person, I would immediately have the right to see him, care for him, comfort him, take care of his affairs for him. Etc. Without that marriage license, I have to have a whole host of other documents to get me access, and then those can be contested by his family if they were not supported in the relationship. So, you know, what I want to say to folks who are against gay marriage is you can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, gay people are not able to constitute committed relationships and then not provide us the vehicle by which to constitute.
Sorry, Brian, we're losing you.
Oh, can you hear me now, Bonnie?
Yes, I hear you good now.
Yeah. Yeah, I said, you know, we can't say to gay folks, you're not capable of constituting a committed relationship. We just don't think you've got enough internal fortitude to do that. But then not provide them the vehicle, marriage, to be able to have those committed relationships. Folks can't have it both ways.
Brian, we have a... controversy among ourselves, even with our women, not as far as gay marriage is concerned, but, you know, the question was posed that if you have gay marriage, then this should really resolve a lot of the problems of gay people marrying straight people.
Mm-hmm.
And on a personal level, I don't think it's really necessarily related. Do you?
Well, I think the more we mainstream the idea of committed same-sex relationships, and one of the ways to do that is through legal marriage, the more stigma we begin to take away, and the more we encourage folks to be honest about their sexuality at a very young age. So I don't think it automatically changes anything to have legalized same-sex marriage. I think over time, it takes the stigma away of being gay. People can come out, be comfortable, and avoid getting into these marriages. But overnight, it's not going to change anything. No.
Yes, because, see, the thing is that I don't necessarily say that it equates with each other. I think it's wonderful for people who are openly gay and they're
mm-hmm.
committed to living a gay life. But I think that
right.
there will always be a segment of society that, due to societal pressures, religious pressures, cultural pressures, internal hatred, whatever the case is, who will never want to be gay, so it's not even going to matter.
Well, there will always be that minority, and I suppose there's a minority of people today that want to cast the demons out of all people who are left-handed. You know, that goes
mm-hmm.
back to the myth like this. But by and large, we don't look with suspicion at people who are left-handed and say that they're sinister characters, and the word sinister actually comes from the term related to being left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't automatically say that. But I suppose there are a few people left that would say you're left-handed, you've got a demon. And so I agree that there will always be pockets, but over time, it changes. You know, how long have we had the civil rights movement in place for people of color? And yet still we have people who behave in ways that are demeaning towards people of color. There's still prejudice out there on subtle as well as gross bases. But it is much better today than it used to be. So
it
I
is,
agree.
And I think attitudes are changing. We couldn't have gotten this far with gay marriage if some attitudes hadn't changed. I mean, the fact
that's
that
right.
any state accepts it, you know, to me is a very big monumental mountain that's been climbed.
Right.
And I
we've
think
got,
that
well,
it's wonderful
polite.
Once again for, you know, you have to keep in mind that as far as gay men getting married, I would say it's anywhere from 15% to 20% of gay men who do. But that leaves the majority of the 80%, you know, who don't. And they're the ones who are really going to benefit from this. But I just feel that, I mean, I know that you're part of a ministry as far as being a psychotherapist and, you know, the work that you do within the church. But you come from a liberal type of church. When I look at some of these other denominations where still to be gay is to go to hell.
Oh, there's going to be a huge, let me tell you what, my psychotherapy practice is going to continue to be filled for many years to come with conflicted gay and lesbian people who are conflicted because of their religious background. Clearly
uh-huh.
that's going to happen. And in fact, with the Supreme Court's decision, some of the right-wing religious groups are more entrenched than ever on the subject. You know, they're redoubling their effort, and they're shaming more and more. So it's not going to change overnight, but it's still better than it was.
Definitely better than it was, and hopefully
yeah.
it will make people less fearful of being gay. You know, even if it's a small percent, it's better than nothing. But, you know, that leads me to the next topic of, you know, since we've talked together on, you know, a few weeks ago, things that so much news has been happening.
Right.
How about the ex-gay movement? That was another
big
victory as far as I was concerned.
Thank God that the Exodus has closed their doors and has said that, you know, come out and told the truth. Nobody's ever changed through these
That
quotes.
Was a very big type of, you know, admission, don't you think so?
Absolutely huge. I can't tell you, even within my own family, I mean, I fought the battle of the scientific test results, you know, trying to say, no, this stuff is bogus, here's the bad science, study the literature. And there's so much emotional conviction behind why people wanting it to work that they, you know, they close their eyes to the good science that says it doesn't work. And now finally the leadership has said, no, there's nobody who's ever changed. They may have accommodated their behavior, they may have faked it, but nobody really changed.
But I think that's even what's even more miraculous is that, you know, the head of the group for Exodus, you know, he came out and apologized.
Yeah. And what did he apologize
that,
for?
It's close to one thing to close it. It's another thing to, you know, apologize. And here
what
was
did he apologize for?
Okay, well, this is, you know, his name is Alan Chambers.
Yep.
And it says, "I am sorry." That's the headline. 3 years ago, yeah. Leslie and I began a very public conversation with our America's Lisa Ling from the Oprah Winfrey Network regarding some of our deeply held beliefs about Christianity and the LGBT community. Today, we have decided to carry this public conversation even further. While this conversation has and may well continue to be met with many different responses from supporters and critics, it's our desire to keep having these honest discussions in the hopes of arriving to a place of peace. Several months ago, this conversation led me to call Lisa Ling to take another step on this messy journey. I asked her if she would once again help us add to the unfolding story by covering my apology to the people who have been hurt by Exodus International. Our ministry has been public, and therefore any acknowledgement of wrong must also be public. I haven't always been the leader of Exodus, but I am now, and someone must finally own and acknowledge the hurt of others. I do so anxiously but willingly. It is strange to be someone who has been both hurt by the church's treatment of the LGBT community and also to be someone who must apologize for being part of the very system of ignorance that perpetuated that hurt. Today it is as if I just woke up to a greater sense of how painful it is to be a sinner in the hands of an angry church. It is also strange to be an outcast from powerful portions of both the gay community and the Christian community. Because I do not completely agree with the vocal majorities in either group and am forging a new place of peaceful service and through both, I will likely continue to be an outsider to some degree. I imagine it to be very much like a man I recently heard speak at a conference I attended, Father Elias Chancor of the Melkite Catholic Archbishop of Israel. He is an Arab Christian, Palestinian by birth, and a citizen of Israel. Talk about a walking contradiction. When I think of the tension of my situation, I'm comforted by the thought of him and his. My desire is to completely align with Christ, his good news for all, and his offer of peace amidst the storms of life. My wife Leslie and my belief centers around the grace, the finished work of Christ on the cross, and his offer of eternal relationships to any and all that believe. Our beliefs do not center on sin because sin isn't the center of our faith. Our journey hasn't been about denying the power of Christ to do anything. Obviously, he is God and he can do anything. With that, here is an expanded version of the apology I offered during my recent interview with Lisa Ling to the people within the LGBTQ community who have been hurt by the church, Exodus International, and me. I realize some within the communities for which I apologize will say I don't have the right as one man to do so on their behalf. But if the church is a body with many members being connected to the whole, then I believe that what one of us does right, we all do right. And what one of us does wrong, we all do wrong. We have done wrong, and I stand with many others who now recognize the need to offer apologies and make things right. I believe this apology, however imperfect, is what God the Father would have me do. And here's the apology. It says, to the members of the LGBTQ community, in 1993, I caused a four-car pileup. In a hurry to get to a friend's house, I was driving when a bee started buzzing around the inside of my windshield. I hit the bee, and it fell on the dashboard. A minute later, it started buzzing again with a fury. Trying to swat it again, I completely missed the fact that a city bus had stopped three cars in front of me. I also missed that those three cars were stopping as well. Going 40 miles an hour, I slammed into the car in front of me, causing a chain reaction. I was injured, and so were several others. I never intended for this accident to happen. I would have never knowingly hurt anyone, but I did, and it was my fault. In my rush to get to my destination, fear of being stung by a silly bee and selfish distraction, I injured others. I have no idea if the people injured in that accident have suffered long-term effects. While I did not mean to hurt them, I did. The fact that my heart wasn't malicious did not lessen their pain or their suffering. I am very sorry that I chose to be distracted that fall afternoon and that I caused so much damage to people and property. If I could take it all back, I absolutely would, but I cannot. I pray that everyone involved in that crash has been restored to health. Recently, I've begun thinking again about how to apologize to people that have been hurt by Exodus International through an experience or by a message. I've heard many firsthand stories from people called ex-gay survivors, stories of people who went to Exodus-affiliated ministries, affiliated ministries or ministers for help only to experience more trauma. I've heard stories of shame, sexual misconduct, and false hope. In every case that has been brought to my attention, there has been swift action resulting in the removal of these leaders and or their organizations. But rarely was there an apology or public acknowledgement by me. And then there is the trauma that I have caused. There were several years that I conveniently omitted my ongoing same-sex attractions. I was afraid to share them as readily and easily as I do today. They brought me tremendous shame, and I hid them in the hopes that they would go away. Looking back, it seems so odd that I thought I could do something to make them stop. Today, however, I accept these feelings as part of my life that will always likely be there. The days of feeling shame over being human in that way are long over, and I feel free to simply accepting myself as my wife and family does, as my friends do, as God does. Never in a million years would I intentionally hurt another person, yet here I sit having to hurt so many by failing to acknowledge the pain some affiliated with Exodus International caused, and by failing to share the whole truth about my own story. My good intentions matter very little and fail to diminish the pain and hurt others have experienced on my watch. The good that we have done at Exodus is overshadowed by all of this. Friends and critics alike say it's simply not enough to change our message or website. I agree. I cannot simply move on and pretend that I've always been the friend that I long to be today. I understand why I'm distrusted and why Exodus is hated. Please know that I am deeply sorry. I am sorry for the pain and hurt many of you have experienced. I am sorry that some of you spent years working through the shame and guilt when you felt your attractions didn't change. I am sorry we promoted sexual orientation change efforts and reparative theories about sexual orientation that stigmatized parents. I am sorry that we were times I didn't stand up to people publicly on my side who called you names like sodomite or worse. I'm sorry, knowing some of you well, failed to share publicly that the gay and lesbian people I know were every bit as capable of being amazing parents as their straight people that I know. I'm sorry that when I celebrated a person coming to Christ and surrendering their sexuality to him, that I callously celebrated the end of a relationship that broke your heart. I'm sorry that I have communicated that you and your families are less than me and mine. More than anything, I'm sorry that so many have interpreted this religious rejection by Christians as God's rejection. I am profoundly sorry that I've walked away from their faith, had them walk away from their faith, and some have chosen to end their lives. For the rest of my life, I proclaim nothing but the whole truth of the gospel, one of grace, mercy, and open invitation to all to enter this inseparable relationship with the Almighty God. I cannot apologize for my deeply held biblical beliefs about the boundaries I see in the scriptures surrounding sex, but I will exercise my beliefs with great care and respect for those who do not share them. I cannot apologize for my beliefs about marriage, but I do not have any desire to fight you on your beliefs or the rights that you seek. My beliefs about these things will never interfere with God's command to love my neighbor as I love myself. You have never been my enemy. I am sorry that I have been yours. I hope the changes in my own life, as well as the ones we announced tonight regarding Exodus International, will bring resolution and show that I am serious in both my regret and my offer of friendship. I pledge that the future endeavors will be focused on peace and common good. Moving forward, we will serve in our pluralistic culture by hosting thoughtful and safe conversations about gender and sexuality, while partnering with others to reduce fear, inspire hope, and cultivate human flourishing. And that was it.
Yeah, well, what I really appreciate about that, and I had read that before, is how well he acknowledges all of the hurt he did to the individuals involved and to the greater families that were involved and to all of those, you know, all of those people who thought that was the message of the faith, and even if they were straight folks, were turned off because they didn't want to have anything to do with such a mean-spirited, agenda. So good for him for doing that.
Well, you know what? I have several different feelings on this, so you can tell me if you think it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
I think saying I'm sorry is good. You know, mm-hmm. I know that many of our women would love to hear those words come out of their ex-husband's mouth.
Absolutely.
Because at least, you know, when you say you're sorry and you've done something wrong, it's validating the fact that other people who you tried to have, who were suffering because of your actions, at least they see you're taking responsibility. So,
right.
You know, I do admire that. I just feel, you know, saying you're sorry, it's a major step. I'm not saying no. I just don't think it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why. The fact that I know some men that I've met throughout the years who went through similar movements. It didn't have to be called Exodus, but similar ones with reparative therapy, brainwashing, all kinds of terrible things. And I know of two people specifically who did commit suicide over this.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the ignorance and stupidity of people like this gentleman, you know, these lives that could have had wonderful times and the families that had to mourn and grieve over them, those people aren't here. I mean, I almost feel like it's a crime that was committed, and just saying I'm sorry isn't good enough. I feel this man should do everything he can to try to make the lives easier, you know, for people. He should raise funds for the families, you know, have to do without their family members, or just start some kind of organization.
I will tell you my first response, Bonnie, because I am in agreement with you. You know, a friend of mine and I were talking. He's a straight man who's been an advocate for the gay community, and he was going on about how wonderful it is. And I said, you know, they've shut this organization down, and if they were really serious, in my opinion, they'd take the money, they send it over to the Human Rights Campaign and say, here, use this to advocate for the full inclusion of gay and lesbian people. But instead, the money that was left over, they're going to open up a new organization that they say is going to help build bridges and get people dialoguing.
They need to stop talking, and they need to start doing something that means something.
That's exactly what I said.
And
you know,
we don't need dialogue. We need action. And the kind of action you need is, if you want to put the money somewhere, like you say, put it towards, you know, fighting for the rights. Or even more importantly, I think, you know, put it towards helping adolescent teens who are going through their own personal health with this.
Sure.
And help them with therapy and counseling,
Hand it over to those who have a track record of doing the right thing. Don't keep it in the hands of those who've done the wrong thing and are trying to learn to do the right thing. I completely agree. That was my point with my friend. I didn't make a lot of headway, but, you know, we'll see.
No, I just feel that the damage that they've done is just so deep. You know, when you go and you ruin people's lives for no reason. And, you know, nothing personal. I mean, it's not just about the gay men. It's also about the straight wives that these men marry.
Right.
Who have to live, you know, these broken lives because, you know, they're living with men who are being brainwashed into, you know, not acting like they're gay, even though they are gay.
Well, how many of the families and these wives, too, have been, in a sense, you know, convinced by this false teaching And they keep they went into it thinking, oh, okay, well my husband, my son, my father, he's going to change and everything will be just fine. Only to find out, that he's not changed and he is secretly having sex on the side, and the hurt is just multiplied. And I have friends who have been through this program. One became an alcoholic while going through one of these reparative therapy programs because he literally broke the drink. And thank God he's now clean and sober and has been for many years. But, I remember seeing him at that point in time when, he had a split lip from all of the alcohol that he was consuming.
Not only that, but he became an active alcoholic, your friend. But a lot of these men that I know personally and have met over the many years, I call them the dry alcoholics. The ones who are not drinking, but they still have that alcoholic mentality. But they're miserable because they're not drinking. And the same thing here. They can live a straight life, quote unquote, but they're not going to be happy doing it because it's not who they are.
Right.
And they're told if you don't do this, then you're going to go to hell and destroy your whole family. So they're forced, because of brainwashing, for lack of saying anything else, that, they have to live this life. But how happy do you think these men are in these marriages where they don't belong?
They're not.
And what kind of intimacy can they have with their wives?
They can't.
Right. So now their wives are miserable.
As I often say to my clients, straight and gay, you cannot have a relationship with somebody else until you have an honest relationship with yourself. You're not available. And when they're trying to be somebody that they're really not available for a deep, emotionally congruent intimacy. I completely agree.
And I don't know if some of these men will ever be, deeply committed and intimate even with men. I think that when their lives have been told the whole time that this is, something terrible, and then all of a sudden they decide, okay, well, I can live with it. This is who I am. But I don't know how good, healthy a relationship they can have. It's like any time you go to any kind of cult and you have to unwind from that or be reprogrammed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not
mm-hmm.
even saying it with a straight woman. I'm saying in their own future gay relationships.
I don't know how
That's going to affect them. Have you worked with any men like that?
Absolutely. this is part of the fallout of the culture we live in, where it's not as normal to be or natural to be, affirmed for being gay as it is to be straight. And so there's a lot of damage that happens very, very early on. It's about living with shame. And when people live under shame, they're not really able to trust enough to get into a deep relationship. And let me also make a point here. This is why a lot of gay men have such a hard time leaving the relationship, is because they have such deep internalized shame that they're not able to, as we would say, man up and fess up. And it takes them a long time to work up to that, if at all. Sometimes it takes the wife crying and doing some investigation to get the truth out, because he's living with so much shame. So sometimes I say to the ladies, yes, it wasn't right that he deceived you. Yes, he shouldn't have lied to you. I completely agree. It was very hurtful. But part of what led him to do it was the fact that he could hardly do otherwise.
How many men do you think, what proportion would you say of gay men go through groups like this, whether it be Exodus or reparative therapy? Do you think it's a lot of men who have been faced with these kinds of organizations?
I really don't know what the stats are. I would actually think it wouldn't be that many that would go through this. I think there are a whole lot that are affected by it, even though they haven't gone through, because the message they've gotten is, you could change if you wanted to. There are groups available for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to go through it, a person has to at least be willing to admit to somebody else that they are. And
was Exodus International like a national movement here in this country? Were there chapters all over?
Not only here; it was beyond this country as well. Yeah, they were all over this country and beyond. It was Exodus International.
Right. But I don't know if they really had many people. Well, they probably had a lot of support for this from Christian right-wing groups, right?
Sure. Sure they did.
I guess these groups are pretty much supported.
Focus on the Family was a strong advocate for reparative therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you
they've got a
that,
lot of money behind them.
I mean, do you think that... Well, they're saying they realize now... Well, he's saying it, but I think that... I mean, you may disagree. I think that... this group will just pop up in a different form.
The movement will the reparative therapy movement is not dead. The grandfather of the whole movement, the biggest organization that does this, is now dead. But it will the practice will continue on.
Don't you think so? It'll just pop up under a different name.
Yeah, I mean, some of the key players that were in it that are still believing that, I'm sure will find other groups and affiliate with those, or they'll reconstitute. I think this guy's done. I believe his sincere apology, but we're not done with it yet, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, I think as long as you have religion, you'll always have groups like this because they really do believe that they're doing the right thing.
That's right.
It doesn't matter what the religion is because, you know, there's extremists in every religion, you know, people who are the fundamentalists, so they claim they are. And with fundamentalism, you know, this, I think, calls for this kind of movement. That's why I think it'll never be dead.
Right. Well, one of the traits of fundamentalism is it's always male-dominant, women are subservient, it's all about control. And that's true no matter what the religious group is. And in order to maintain that, they enforce heterosexual marriages because it's ultimately about this is getting a little deep, but it's ultimately about property rights and and controlling sex and birth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just can't imagine that. Like I say, there won't be a replacement for this group, but I do think it is. You know, that Alan Chambers at least started, you know, thinking in the right direction. I think it was a major, major monumental event.
Yes.
Much
almost
like the Supreme Court. I would put it right on the same level.
Yeah. Oh, it is. I mean, it doesn't maybe have the legal implications, but socially it has profound implications.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Ryan, a few other things I wanted to bring up and just get your feelings on this so that maybe women can have a better understanding. When, you know, when men are, you know, self-hating, I like to call it, you know, have a sense of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's because, you know, when they talk, you can hear how they're knocking gay people and how, you know, they call them all kinds of names, why they themselves are gay. You know, this internal shame of some type, and that by sitting and calling gays name that maybe people won't suspect that they're gay? Or do they really
projection.
Have these feelings of hatred towards gays because they are gay? Can you explain that a little more?
Well, I think it depends on the person and the situation, but we see both. We see individuals who they have so much internalized homophobia and they suppress it so much that it comes out in suspicion about others, and they become more obsessed with a person's orientation than you know, other people who are around them that are straight. They, you know, they're not noticing, but these guys who are really self-loathing are looking for the most subtle cues to point other people and others because they're really projecting themselves. Then there are those who really know that they're gay, and they're doing it because it's just politically convenient, where it might be to you know, play that part. And I think that's even more you know, morally reprehensible to do that.
I know. It's not like gay people have a hard enough time to start with, but then to have people who are you know, self-haters, you know, to make it worse for them. You know, I think it's just really deplorable, and I've seen this happen with some men who are passing as straight, and they make the most anti-gay comments, and I always find that very deplorable. But one of the things that you and I have begun discussing, and, you know, I haven't formulated all my thoughts on this, but, you know, I'm trying to just, you know, articulate everything in my mind, that as far as these men who do get married, and for whatever their intention, I really do believe that they do love their wives when they get married. For the most part, maybe not every single one. But I really have to say that even though they do love their wives, they love their wives as much as they can as a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not straight, and I don't feel they're capable of the kind of love for a woman any more than I'm capable of that kind of love for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a straight woman, I could love my friends, and I could love my best girlfriend, but I don't want to have to be in a position of forcing myself to have sex with her because
right.
I'm straight.
Right.
So that love and time, you know, I would think of a million reasons why I don't want to make love to her because that's not my sexual orientation.
Right.
So let's say that was the law of the land, that you have to marry somebody of the same sex. I guess
right.
I would have to do it, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to be happy doing it. And that love,
right.
when time would turn to resentment or even hatred with enough pressure and, you know, battling over it. So
right.
even though these men do say they love their wives, it's not the same kind of love, in my opinion. How do you feel about that?
This is what both I hear both from gay men who come out as well as lesbians that come out later is that when they finally put it together, they recognize the deep emotional kind of soul connection with a member of the same sex that they just don't have with their opposite sex spouse. And they care deeply about these people. And when they got into these marriages, most of them were doing
mm-hmm.
the best good with what they had to work with, their own self-understanding. Sure, there are folks who go into it saying, well, make a good cover for me, but they're few and far between by comparison to those who are really trying to do what they think is right, and they are pushing down what they are rejecting in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And no, they may have performed, they may have had intercourse, there may have been even some physical pleasure to it, but it really wasn't them. It didn't fit. It wasn't emotionally congruent. Wasn't deeply satisfied.
Right. It didn't connect. And
didn't
this is what I say. You know, I had sex with my ex-husband, and I was involved with a gay man before my ex-husband, who I didn't know he was gay until many years later, because, you know, he didn't himself hadn't come to terms with it. But I always
right.
felt in both of those relationships, there wasn't that kind of emotional, passionate connection. Because I think for them, it was something they felt they needed to do as part of being with somebody or an expectation. And they could do it sometimes, maybe not all the time, but, you know, they could do it. And
mm-hmm.
maybe in trying to convince themselves they weren't gay, they felt, well, if I can put up this pretense, then I'm not really gay anyway. But
well said. Well,
it just didn't connect. You know, it just didn't. I always felt it was there was an emptiness and
yeah.
a disconnect as far as, you know, bedroom was concerned. You know,
well,
it lacked that passion. It lacked the excitement. I mean, it's not to say, like you said, they can't get excited, have an erection, have an orgasm. You know, not all the time, but sometimes, and maybe when they're younger. I think it just gets more difficult as you get older. Is that true?
It gets more difficult for straight folks when it gets older. I presume it gets more difficult for gay folks, too. Yeah, I think it does. Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, it doesn't seem to get more difficult for gay men with men.
Well, but the truth, though, is that as a man ages, even if he's, you know, with another man because he's gay, there are going to be more challenges over time, depending on the health of the individual, and how they're doing emotionally. You know, we have so many people with anxiety and depression today. Never underestimate that on a person's sexual behavior as well. But when you throw that into a mixed marriage of a gay man with a straight woman, and then you pull in the job pressures and oftentimes the depression and the anxiety that people have that come along with all of this, you know, it's one, no wonder it's very unsatisfying for all parties.
You know, one of the things I was talking to you about also is that I'm just thinking everything out and putting it all together. I really do believe that those men who do not want to be gay, because, and I'm not blaming them for not wanting to be gay, I'm saying because of cultural values, religious society, whatever the case is, that they
right.
spend a lot of time observing straight men to make sure that they're acting like that. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm. And checking themselves to make sure that they're not acting gay.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Well, it means, I guess, the stereotype that they have, you know, portrayed gay people as.
Right.
You know, the way they walk, the way they lisp, the way they talk, you know, the way they sashay down the runway. I mean, for whatever the most extreme of extreme, you know, stereotypical behavior that people feel of gays, and I think that's what they're always afraid that, you know, they're going to demonstrate and people will find out. Because we do see that our husbands change after they leave. Like, their behaviors change drastically. Their
sure.
looks change.
Yep.
So what do you think the reason is for that? They don't have to be pretending anymore?
They don't have to be pretending in many cases. Now, I know of some cases where, of course, they have so much internalized homophobia, fear of being gay, that when they do leave, you know, some men don't change that much because they don't want the people at work to know. They try to control who knows the family and that sort of thing. But for many, it's a relief. They no longer have to play a game. They've got some more energy, so they get to the gym. And
mm-hmm.
they start eating better because now, you know, they're not hitting the bottle because they're not depressed over being in a bad situation, and they're motivated to take care of themselves. They want to look good because they've got an opportunity to meet somebody that they can feel congruent with. And I know that sounds really hard, and I would hate to be the former wife watching all of that, how hard that would be to watch. But what you asked, saying that's what I think is going on, you know? And you know, bless them and go on with your own brilliant life. That's what, you know, I want the women to do, is to take as good care of themselves as they begin to see their ex-husbands doing for themselves.
Do you think that women need to set boundaries with their, you know, ex-husbands?
Of course they do. This whole idea that, you know, I'm going to stay best friends with this guy. The only time that makes any sense is if he's been completely forthright and honest and had integrity and said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I never should have done this. I now have the courage to tell you I want to act with integrity. Okay, there I can see people staying really good friends. But if there's been manipulation and control and, you know, lying and all of that, bless him and go on with your own life. Set the boundary. And, of course, if there are children involved, you know, you still are going to have to co-parent until the child's 18, and then after that there may still be some other things. But set appropriate boundaries. Set appropriate boundaries. And take care.
I know. I think so many of us still are, you know, so many, and I think this is normal, that women say, well, I still love him. Well, yeah, you still love him. I mean, just because last week he announced to you, guess what, honey, I'm gay, doesn't mean you stopped loving him.
Right.
You know, women come to me and they say, how do I stop, you know, loving him?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think sometimes you ever stop loving him, but it doesn't mean that you can't set boundaries.
Well,
you're loving an
yeah.
illusion you had, right?
Thank you. It's a couple thoughts there. Now, this is really important, that you've got to have appropriate boundaries there, but you also have to put some boundaries around how much time you spend thinking about how much you love him and how much you're missing him. That, you know, there's going to be external boundaries between you and him, and then internally inside yourself, you're going to have to begin to detach, and that takes some very, you know, that takes work sometimes to do that, and that means you have to notice your own thinking and say, I notice my mind is going there, and that's had enough attention from me today. I need to put my mind over here. I'm now going to do this and go take a walk, call a friend, go get the groceries, go to the gym, do something for yourself, okay? But you have to work at detaching.
I know, because I don't think you can really move on if you don't detach. You're never going to give yourself a chance to meet somebody else, right?
Yep. As a Jesuit friend of mine, may he rest in peace, he's died a long time ago now, but when I was early on in ministry, and he was a wise older man, he said to me, sometimes, Brian, we have to detach with love, but we have to detach. Doesn't mean you have to be vicious and hateful. You simply say, I'm going now my own way, and you're not waiting for the phone call or, hey, when are we going to meet for coffee and just, hang out together? No, you go on with your own life.
I know, and I think that's really hard for women to do, because unlike marriages where there's, really hardships going on for years and couples get sick of each other and, for whatever the reasons, it's in many cases a relief when a marriage ends. You're just glad to say, well, I'm glad I'm rid of him. But in these marriages, many of our women really love their husbands and they don't know there's a problem, or if they do know there's a problem, they're not thinking this is what the problem is. And they're thinking, well, he's going through financial problems, or we're going through this, or his pressure at work. And, of course, he's not telling the truth anyway. He's, telling all kinds of other things. So there was no way to understand that really gay was the problem. So now that he comes and says, look, I can accept I'm gay, I've come to terms with myself, I have to move on, so he's had a lifetime to deal with it, but of course, you're just finding out now. That doesn't mean that automatically you're going to hate this person. And
that's,
I think,
right.
That's the difference, that with women who are married to gay men versus women who are married to straight men, where marriage has just gone bad. This is where marriage has just gone gay.
Exactly. And she's the last one to come to. She's the last one to get the invitation to the party.
Exactly.
And he's been decorating the whole time. So here.
We were saying that tonight. Another thing is that when people tell you, "Well, I always knew he was gay." Like, and my women said, "Well, why didn't you tell us?"
Right.
How is it that we're the last to know? Everybody else knew he was gay.
Yeah. Well, they were embarrassed and they were colluding with the whole shame piece. And remember, that's part of why he didn't tell you, too. He was having such a hard time dealing with it. I want to make a real strong point. I really care deeply about these wonderful women who have written to me, who have contacted me by phone, or I've had some Skype sessions with them. And I hope you look in the mirror. You're beautiful people. It's like, well, he's the only person I know. And it's like, but look at you. You're talented. You're educated. You can make new friends. You must take care of yourself. You must connect with people and continue to build your brilliant life,
And you know what? It sounds good, but, when the people have been beaten down for so long, and they don't believe it, but it's true. I mean, you look at these women. I'm sorry,
yeah,
I lost you again.
Yep. Are you there?
I'm here.
Bonnie. Okay. Yeah, I know it's, I can only imagine, because I haven't been in that position of the women who have been, emotionally abused and all of that. However, even though I haven't been there, what I can say is, with certainty, nothing's going to change until you decide, okay, I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to work one step at a time to changing my life for me. And Bonnie, you did it. You said, I'm not going to stay stuck in my sorrow and pain. I'm going to do something about it. And you created this wonderful outreach to other women to help take care of them. You did something brilliant. And because of that, others are healing. So, keep your eye on the prize, I want to say to them, and the prize is developing your own life and loving yourself and letting other wonderful, healthy people love you too.
And not only that, but maybe finding the true love that you missed out on the first time, because we have
right.
so many excellent happily ever, re-ever afters, I call them, you know, for women who, not every woman wants to have a relationship again, but a lot of them do.
A lot of them do, and they have it if they want it.
Right, and there's,
yep.
and that's fine. You can find it, but you can't find it as long as you're staying, you know, hung up or stuck. But
right,
that's one of the
right.
great things with you, Brian, is that, you know, I'd like to let women know this, that Brian is a wonderful therapist, and the great thing with Brian is that he can Skype you. Is that the right word? I don't want to sound that
bad.
You can Skype with you. Yeah, you can Skype with you for counseling or do phone counseling. You don't have to actually visually see him, and he's extremely helpful. I mean, I think just listening to him on the phone, you know, you feel better every time, and that Brian really gives wonderful perspective and a different way to look at things so that you feel better and have a better understanding. And also, if you have husbands who are trying to be honest and who need this kind of therapy, you know, Brian and I did a special radio show just for the men to listen to, where Brian really encourages them to do the right thing and why it's so important to do it. If any of you would like to listen to that link, because this is a special show we did outside the realm of our regular show, just let me know by emailing me at bonk@aol.com. And maybe just hearing what Brian has to say, you know, would really, like I say, if you're still with your husbands, get them to talk to Brian so that they could come up with better plans than you have right now. And Brian, if they want to get in touch with you, they can go to your website, correct?
Correct.
And that's www.dr, like as in doctor, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Hooper, H-O-O-P-E-R.com. Or if you go to gayhusbands.com, you'll see Brian right at the top of resources for therapy for men. But you can also use them for a woman, because a lot of times women feel comfortable talking to another man and getting the perspective of what's going on, especially because Brian can really understand it. He works with number of people in our situation, and he's really great for working with either your husband, with you, or together. So don't cheat yourself. You know, therapy is truly the key for many people in restarting over. It doesn't have to be a lifetime thing. It could be there for a crisis. It could be there for a short period or for as long as you need it. But when you need to get help, he's definitely the man to go to. So, Brian, can you believe our hour's already up?
I know. This has really flown by tonight. This has been great.
It has.
Covered a lot of I want to give a quick shout-out. It's still June, the month of Father's Day. I want to give a quick shout-out to those men who did do the right thing and who are acting responsibly and who are co-parenting if they've still got kids and doing it in a way that's respectful. So to the gentlemen, thank you for doing that. And we all make mistakes and we go on. Thank you for that.
Yeah, the best thing is that you make a mistake, you can fix it. You don't have to live in it forever. And
that's
when
right.
you come back at the end of the month, which is only 4 weeks away, one of the topics that, you know, I'd like for us to discuss is about the effects this has on children. And,
absolutely.
You know, I have Brian in touch with the leader of our adult children of Gay Fathers group, and he's gaining insight, going to be gaining a lot of insight from that. And if you do have an adult child, 18 or over, who needs support, because our children deal with so many issues, as I've discussed before, and some of you are very familiar with those issues, and they do need support. You know, we have a wonderful mechanism for providing that for them, but we will be bringing up that issue, what to tell the children, when to tell the children, what happens when you don't tell the children, you know, is living in a broken family, meaning that you're staying together, worse than when you split up. So there's so many different issues concerning the children, and if you have any questions you would like to present for that night, you can feel free to write to me as well. So, Brian, thank you for making my night and my week, as you always do.
Thank you, honey. My real privilege to be able to reach out and help care for these great ladies. And thank you
for
giving
me
that opportunity. Yeah, they are. They really are. And I so respect them. I just am glad I can help in some way.
Yes. And thank you so much. And I love you, Brian Hooper.
I love you too. Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, love you and love to all of our listeners. We'll be back here next week. Have a safe July 4th weekend and week. Good night, everybody. Good night, Brian.
Good night, Bonnie.